We're very, very fortunate. We are very, very, very
We have
loved.
A lot of Muslim friends, Hindu friends, and Sikh friends. And they all say the same as what I say. If you cut your finger, what color is the blood? Everybody's got the same color blood. So to us,
it doesn't
we
matter
love
what you
every
are.
One of them. And we always will, because we have very, very good...
We're joined.
Joined.
Rose and Eric Anderson were teenagers when the British, after nearly 350 years ruling present-day India, Pakistan, Bangladesh and Myanmar under the banner of British India, formally granted India and Pakistan independence. Upon the announcement, on the 14th and 15th of August 1947, the partition into a secular India and a Muslim Pakistan triggered violent clashes between Hindus, Muslims and Sikhs. Millions of people raced across the newly drawn borders, many in fear of their lives, as their religions suddenly became the mark of their new nations. Eric Anderson's father was with the British military, a colonel in the departing forces, based on the Indian side of the border with his young family. Rose Greenfield was the daughter of a wealthy Irish industrialist, living just outside Karachi in the new nation of Pakistan, and would soon to be one of its most famous female athletes. Now married for nearly 50 years, their memories of the bloodshed to follow, then as now, is etched in their story. Rose, your family, how did your family first move or begin in
Well, as far
British
as I
India?
Know, Daddy was Irish. He was born in St. Anne's outside Dublin, and he was with the British Army, and he got demobbed in some part in India, and then he came down and settled in Karachi, which was a little fishing village at that time, and he started businesses. Made a salt works out of the sea. He made a skating rink. He used to run salt up to Russia. He had a theatre which he used to import people from all around the world to perform in. He had the best furniture company in India. He used to supply all the embassies and everything. And do you know the dehydration that's on the market now was my father's invention during the war? And he took that invention to Delhi and sold it to Eric's father, who was in charge of feeding the Burma campaign. And he also could make mangrove into a block that you could burn. What do you call them? Briquette. Oh, he was brilliant, my dad. And I can't even... You know all the foam blank? Put fires out. That was my dad's invention. And during the war, you know, the barrage balloons that they flew over the Thames was my father's invention. He was offered the OBE twice, but he turned it down.
Why is that?
I don't know. He was just a very modest person.
Was he very much, say, a British subject? Did he feel like he was a British subject?
No, he was Irish.
Irish.
No, he was just a lover of all mankind. During one of the famines, he loaded up a whole ship and took it across to Bombay and supervised the unloading of the grain for the people. He didn't leave it because, you know, these people put into black market and things like that. But he cut down a big dhow that ploughs the street up the Persian Gulf, and he redesigned a launch out of that to pull the barges of salt out. He was brilliant, my dad, and he made sluice gates and goodness knows what, I don't know, and I was only a youngster, but he was brilliant.
And were you born there in
yes,
Karachi?
Yes, I was born in Karachi, yeah. One of nine.
Oh, okay.
I'm the middle.
So what year was that? So
1933.
Okay.
That's when you were born.
That's
when
born. I was born, yeah. But I mean, so that shows how old I am.
Tell us about growing up Karachi, up
in
until
Karachi, because it was a small fishing village and things like that. We lived 12 miles out of the city where the daddy had the salt works. He had a double-story home with 16 rooms in it. And we had a wonderful life because it was all jungle out there, which is now a big airport for the Pakistan what do you call it, army airport or whatever you call it. But that was all jungle in those days. And my forte was sports, because I was crazy on sports. So I used to do all the sports. My daddy had a jumping pit made for me and jumping poles, and I was there 24 hours if I could get away with it.
Rose went on to become one of Pakistan's most famous athletes. A huge photograph of her hangs in a major Karachi sports stadium alongside the father of Pakistan, Muhammad Ali Jinnah. She recalls the day when she met the great statesman.
I met him at the sports, the first Pakistan Olympics. He gave me my certificate, and his sister was over there as well. And we were invited to Government House to have tea. I was only 14. And, you know, he came to the table and talked to her. I've got a photograph there somewhere. I'm talking to us. All the people who were at the table with me, the performers, were silent. Mr. Jinnah and I were way off. He said to me, "Had you had enough?" I said, "Oh, we could do with some more ice cream, cheeky little brat." And he laughed. I was not popular with the girls. With the boys, yes. Very popular with the boys. Until Eric came into my life, and the boys all were put aside.
Eric, your family, how did your family come to British India?
I don't know how long that they were over there, but my grandfather, originally, he used to be a doctor on a ship, I believe. And
your father was in the British
military? In the army. First of all, he went from England and he fought in the Khyber Pass area, and he was mentioned in dispatches over there. And he joined what was called the Royal Indian Army Service Corps. And
Eric's father had to bring the last convoy of Pakistani army out of India, because at that time all the slaying was going on. They were just murdering each other, you know, the Pakistani Muslims murdering Hindus, Hindus murdering, and you'd have one train full of dead bodies coming from Lahore. Mm. Or into Lahore from Delhi or wherever, it was to be the other way.
There was tragedy on both sides. They both committed carnage.
Rose, how did living in Karachi before partition, what was the general feeling there about what would soon become India? Or was it still...
It was still British Raj.
It was all just...
British Raj.
Yeah, there was no definitive line.
No. There was no cut-off until the actual day when this carnage started between the Muslims and the Hindus, unfortunately. It's ridiculous, but that's after all their time. You know... once partition was declared, most of the Hindus left Karachi and went, and then you got all these Muslims coming. See, we could walk in shorts and nobody would dare say anything to us before partition. But once partition came, you had to cover up, you know, because you just go and play tennis and come home in your shorts, walk home. And you dare not do that afterwards.
How did your father and your family react at that time? Was there any talk of actually leaving?
My dad was dying. Oh, yes, my father had wanted to come to Australia before the war. He was preparing to come. And then the war came along and nine of us to move, I suppose. I mean, he had the wealth, but just never. He just turned into doing this dehydration and all this stuff. I can still remember him and Mummy chopping up the vegetables and this... I called it like a wooden horse. It was electrically done. And Daddy putting it in and temperatures and all this. I can still remember all that. And it was fascinating.
How about your rest of your family?
Well, we, being children, we just accepted it. You know, you didn't think anything of it. It's partition and you didn't worry about it. But the loss of life came afterwards, you know, because all the grandeur and stuff disappeared.
Eric, your family at partition, what was the feeling then of everything that was happening in that lead up for your father and yourselves in your teens, I suppose?
Well, when you look back on it and you saw the carnage that took place at that stage of the game, and I heard it on the radio because there weren't television in those days, and when I used to hear names like Hindu names and then Muslim names that had been killed, and amongst them were some of my friends. At my age, I was very, very, very sorry that some of my friends, for no reason, just because they were a
different race,
had to be killed. And nobody killed me. Why didn't they kill me?
No, because you were not Muslim or Hindu.
As I said, you cut your hand. All the ones that we know, they said, your blood is red, our blood is red. And I think it really struck me. There was a very, very nice boy who used to write to me from when we went up to Simla while the partition took place at that stage, up on the ridge. Salil Dutt was his name, wrote to me and told me all the carnage that was going on in Delhi. And I never got another letter from him. Then I heard that Salil had been killed. And I heard so many of my friends over there had been
They just went wild.
And yet, my father was told, he was coming out to Australia at that stage when partition took place. So he was in charge of a convoy from Simla, and it was going to go to Delhi, and from Delhi we were going to go all the way to Karachi. And he was going to come and settle in Perth, and we were coming with him. And so we had a convoy there, and he had maybe 75 trucks.
There were women and children
in them.
All the Muslims.
Muslims. They were these army four-wheel, eight-wheel drive or whatever they were. And my father, mother and family, we were in the front one, and behind them we had all these Muslims and so on and so forth. And I used to collect butterflies and chase butterflies, and I'd been in military boarding school. And my father said to me, Eric, he said, if one truck stops, the whole convoy will stop. He said, get out your butterfly net and go down and find out what's going on. So we had to stop a few times. I stopped and went back, and I heard one person saying, Zenana, Zenana, which is a Muslim name for lady. So I came back and I said, Dad,
we're passing through Hindu territory.
And they're calling them Zenana.
Muslim.
So I said, he said, okay. And he sent a message around that everyone had to keep their mouths shut. And when we got down to Kolka, which was the base of the Himalayas and the place.
Still India.
Well, they were still in India. We didn't stop directly at the station because of all these Muslims
Friends.
That were there. And they didn't want the Indians to know that they were there, so we were outside. But we went to the refreshment rooms and things like that, and I, being, you know, sort of nosy, and I had a butterfly net with me, I walked round to the other side of one of these platforms, chasing a butterfly, and I opened the carriage door, and a head rolled down from in front of me, full of blood, and there was blood all around the carriage. I came and told my dad, and he said, keep it quiet.
It's all right, darling. It's a long time ago.
I can't help it, Mother.
Yeah, it's all right. It was a gruesome sight for a child.
On the day of partition, there was a complete breakdown of law and order as 14.5 million people crossed the borders to what they hoped was the safety of their religious majority. Massive slaughter ensued as governments and communities railed against the biggest migration in recorded history. Estimates of the death toll at partition vary between 200,000 to a million people. Eric's family in his father's military and refugee convoy made for the Pakistan border.
We went to Ambala, which was a hospital, and my father took charge of that, and it was a big compound there. And all those people went into the wards.
All the Muslims got out for the night, and, you know, so that they could sleep overnight and do their cooking and everything like that. And in the morning, when they got back onto the trucks, Eric's father went around the hospital, and everything had been stripped, mattresses and beds and God knows what, every implement. And he really put his foot down, and he said to them, "You've put every single thing back on that in that hospital."
He had a major general who was in the convoy, and my father was only a colonel at that stage. He pulled his pistol out, and he said, "My family and this gentleman are going around Ambala Kent, and we're coming back. When we come back, if that stuff is not there," he said, "I'm going to shoot him." And when we came back, we walked into the place.
It was spotless.
Even the thermometers had been put back. I'll never forget the courage of my father doing something like that. Coming back to Ambala, they all got into the buses and the trucks. We got to Delhi. And when we got to Delhi, they were put into trains over there, into the carriages. And we had two carriages because there was my father, mother and five of us, with the kukri drawn so that nobody could come near the carriage.
They're wonderful people. Madadito
imanito mada. With the Andersons now settled in Pakistan, Eric was shuffled off to school, where he met the young, sprightly Rose Greenfield.
I had to go to a military boarding school, and I was absolutely scared stiff of girls. When I landed up at the grammar school in Karachi, the girl that was the most athletic over there chased me and caught me. And now she's been my girlfriend and my wife for 58 years plus, and I would never change her. She's the best girl in the world.
No hope. No hope of letting go.
Rose moved to Australia in 1955, reuniting with Eric, whose family moved there shortly before. Within 2 years, they were married. In 1989, Rose and Eric Anderson made their way back to India, more than four decades after partition and their teenage years in British India.
We went for 2 months.
Wherever we went, we were received as though we were kings or queens, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, like, we had never left India. We got that same respect like it was the British Raj. I was walking down Calcutta when I went into the bank to change the things. Tea was brought and everything and all this kind of stuff, and I wasn't charged this or that or whatever. And then we visited all the places that Eric had stayed in Calcutta and Delhi with his family. And, of course, it had changed a lot, but we were welcomed into the house. Absolutely, you know, tea
we
and coffee.
We slept in the house where my mother and father, it was their bedroom. And we found out it was a minister who was living there in Rajiv's government and Indra's government. But he came out and he saluted me. He said, "Good morning, sir, what can I do?" And I said, "Well, my father and mother lived in here for nearly 10, 15 years. I went up to Sanaa, so I lived in here during the summer months." And a peon came out, dressed very well with the pagri and all the things on them, and he said, "Salam sahab, mem sahab bolta ghar aapke hai," which means the lady of the house said, "The house is yours." So we met her, and she was a very, very
nice
lady.
She was the daughter-in-law of the minister. It was a lady minister.
Yeah.
And her son was used to guard
Rajiv.
And they made us so welcome. We stayed there the whole day, and they drove us home to our hotel. So when we came back from Agra, we stayed the night over there, and we slept in Eric's parents' room, and that's where Pandit Nehru had slept.
He slept in that room
before partition,
yeah.
You know, because being in the government and all that kind of stuff, and the colonel. dealing with them.
Have you revisited Pakistan?
No.
Karachi?
No.
No.
Not worth it.
No, I think
it would break my heart if I went back there, because where Clifton Beach was, it used to be all open now, right up to Hub River, where my brother used to go for crocodile shooting. And that's, what, 20-odd miles away. It's all full.
See, this was mainly due to the fact that
all the people from India came
down. India had come over to that side, and so there was no places for the multitude of people that had come there.
And they couldn't live under Indian rule.
They couldn't. Yeah.
There are still some Muslims living there, you know. They managed. But there's no Hindus living in Karachi. Mm-mm.
To me, you heard me just now when I was in Kolka. I walked around and opened that.
Mm-hmm. Don't go and live that again.
Mm.
To me, that hits me like that, because my friend was blown up, and the others that I know, they were innocent. There was nothing wrong with them. They were wonderful.
But all
wonderful
these
people
that died were innocent.
And I feel ashamed of mankind. I feel very, very ashamed that people do that. You cut them, you've got red blood.
Especially after they had lived side by side for 200 years or so.
I feel sorry
for
them. The families.
This to erupt like that, this hatred. And it's worldwide now.